Hello and welcome to the Personal Development School podcast. I'm your host, Thais Gibson, and I create regular podcast episodes to teach you about your relationships, attachment style, and the subconscious mind. My goal of this podcast is to give you tools and awareness you need to thrive in your relationships, feel deeply connected, and find harmony and fulfillment in your relationships and personal life. So I hope you tune in here with me each and every week. So we are going to talk all about strengthening self-identity today, and we're really going to talk a little bit about self-soothing as well from the context of what we can do as individuals to self-soothe and how to create like a healthy self-soothing routine as on a general basis. I just saw somebody in the chat say, I don't understand the acronyms AP and DA. So Summer, welcome. AP is anxious preoccupied. It's a type of attachment style that tends to feel anxious and needy and need to sort of cling on to their partner when they feel afraid. It's rooted in a trauma response from childhood if they get a lot of exposure to fearing being abandoned. Dismissive avoidant is the DA, and it means the person who's sort of avoidant to commitment in relationships. And usually it's because they have some responses or childhood trauma around being neglected as a kid. And so deep connection A wasn't modeled to them, and B, or safe and healthy connection wasn't modeled to them, and B, they learn to associate that it's not going to work anyway. So they fear even putting themselves out there because they assume it's not going to go well. And then you may hear us talk about FAs as well. And fearful avoidant is the one that sort of swings from side to side, can be anxious sometimes and feel the need to fear abandonment, and sometimes can feel avoidant from the other perspective as well. So hopefully that's helpful. You'll probably hear us mention a few of those today. So what we're going to talk about is sort of like what an identity crisis is, where it comes from. There are different stages of identity development. We're not going to go through all that kind of stuff today, but we're just going to talk about like the core elements of what an identity crisis looks like, why we can have an identity crisis after a breakup, after a big change in life, after loss or grieving somebody, and just sort of to notice what symptoms may come up so we can recognize if we are in that position and then what we can do about it. And then what we're going to talk about is how to strengthen our self-identity. And we want to have this ability to not get into a position where we're like overly attached and rigid about our identity and sense of self, like always bulldozing everybody else with our own identity or things like that. But really the healthy way of being in interdependent relationships is building this ability to know oneself, communicate and take oneself into consideration when making choices in a relationship. So it's not just me considering the other person all the time at the expense of my own feelings and needs. And then also being able to get into a position where we can consider another person equal to ourselves, and really doing that and going back and forth about taking self into consideration and other, and being able to communicate if there are any discrepancies, is a really powerful way of showing up. And this leads to healthy interdependency long-term. But what we often find is if we're a little bit more on the narcissistic spectrum, or if we, and I don't mean like full-blown narcissist or anything like that, but, or if we've learned to cope by being overly invested in our sense of self and just considering ourselves and our own needs, maybe from a protective mechanism rather than anything that's rooted in like the need for significance and narcissism related. But if we're in that space, we sometimes have to move the needle to interdependency and come back a bit and learn to take somebody else into consideration. But then if we are usually anxious leaning in relationships or have codependent patterns, sometimes we don't get to know ourselves. And so we can't truly consider our own needs in relationship to self and bring those into a relationship. But instead we tend to derive our sense of self from the outside in, meaning that the APs and so the anxious individuals and the more fearful avoidant individuals are often in a position where they are trying to figure out what they need and how they can get these needs met through other people more exclusively. And they're all like their relational needs, not their personal needs. It's like, oh, I need this from this person. I need attention. I need care, or I need whatever it might be. And it's like, okay, how about how we can give those things to ourselves as well? So we have to learn like the layers of self, what the self is made up of. And we're going to explore the layers to the self and what the self is made up of, how to get into a healthy, harmonious relationship with the different aspects of ourselves, and then how to reprogram what may not be serving us any longer. So, and then we'll talk about the soothing component. So first and foremost, what is identity? Well, identity is about becoming clear on who we are and the direction we want our lives to move in. And it's really one of the most important things we'll do for ourselves. And it's because if we don't know who we are or what direction we want our lives to move in, we are rather than actively initiating our lives and moving in a directional way towards the things that are important to us so we can feel fulfilled. And we feel fulfilled by knowing our needs, by filling those needs buckets, by letting go of the parts of the self-identity that are not serving us, like our old fears or traits that were maybe born of trauma or things like this. So by becoming clear on the decision we want to make for ourselves and the direction we want our lives to move in, we increase our chance at fulfillment. And when we don't do this, we're basically in a state of passively reacting to what comes our way, which massively decreases your chances of fulfillment in life. So what you have to know first is when we talk about self-identity, it's not, you know, it's sometimes we can get into like these all or nothing patterns around the idea of the self. The self is not something rigid, but it's also not something obsolete, right? It's not something where it's like, I am this person, I will always access the trait of X, Y, Z. I will always be perfectly empathetic. That's who I am. When we overattach to these ideas, we put ourselves in a box. And when the box gets pushed on, or we have a moment of not being that trait that we think we're always supposed to be, we get into self-judgment. We get into fear. We get into, you know, sort of negative patterns and emotions that arise. And so it's not rigid, okay? But it's also not something that's obsolete. It's a very like directional thing, okay? With the ability to pivot, with the ability to be flexible in new situations around different things. And so we're not here to create this like script for our lives down to like the very minute details and then project these expectations and ideas onto other people around us. But we're also not here to wander the world and just move through life directionless and without a sense of identity or purpose. And so the idea here is for self-discovery, it's for introspection, and it's to be able through self-discovery and introspection to create a passionate direction mixed with healthy non-attachment to expectations and the ability to pivot and be flexible along our journey. So the term identity itself is defined as the qualities, the beliefs, the personality, the expressions that make up a person or group. And a psychological identity relates to self-image, self-esteem, and individuality. So the importance of knowing ourselves has a lot to do with knowing what to say yes and no to, right? If I know, for example, that I am for personal growth, and that's an important part of self-identity for me, and then somebody wants me to do something that goes against that or that doesn't invest a lot of my time into something where that's not involved, I can tune into myself and be like, you know what, I'm, you know, let's say it's a career, right? And let's say somebody says, hey, come do this career, and there's no personal growth involved, but one of your big needs is personal growth. You have some insight and information ahead of time to be able to say, you know, I can respect that, but I'm not sure that that's the best fit for me in a situation, right? And by taking yourself into consideration, you know what your yeses and nos are more effectively, which allows you to continuously make better life choices and decisions that support the highest expression of you as a person, of your identity, and also of fulfillment and happiness in your life. So we can go through these different dynamics where we have different stages of development, and there's different stages of development that affect, you know, as we are children, young children, as we are going through different age ranges as children, as we become a teenager, and as we become a full-fledged adult. And if you're interested in knowing all the different stages of development and the rites of passage for each stage, you can actually check out the self-identity course because it goes into that in a lot of detail. But what I really want to focus on here today is like, what are the layers of self? How can we identify what are who we are at a deeper level? How can we release what's not serving us? And really understanding the difference between a self chosen on autopilot and a self chosen consciously and intentionally. And when we look at this, right? Let's say we take Bob, and let's say Bob grows up in a family with a lot of trauma. So let's pretend Bob grows up in a family where there's a lot of yelling, a lot of chaos, a lot of anger, and that's because his parents have his own trauma. But let's say he grows up in that environment. Maybe he adapts to that environment to stay safe by learning to be dishonest to get out of things or problems, right? Not wanting to inflame any chaos. So if he thinks he's going to get in trouble or cause someone else to get in trouble, he lies about things or redirects or isn't honest. Maybe another trait he develops is to learn to fight back. Maybe he feels like I have to learn to survive in this chaotic environment. So I use anger as a tool as well to create boundaries and space and to get mad and to keep people away. And maybe he also learns, well, it's unsafe to be vulnerable because people are chaotic. So he learns to be shut down and disconnected and to not get too close to anybody and not show his vulnerable self because he can't afford to be weak. Maybe he builds a belief that says, if I'm vulnerable, I'm quote unquote weak. in this environment. So he may learn all these adaptations because of trauma. Then he may grow up and not even realize that these are his subconscious programs, right? We go through life, we don't even know until we actually look what most of our programs and qualities and traits are and the way we behave in situations. And so let's say Bob then grows up, he goes through some of his life. And when he feels like there's impending attack in any form or chaos, he overdefends and he gets mad and angry and he yells and raises his voice. And when he feels like people are getting too close to him, he pushes them away full force because he doesn't want to go through what he went through again in his childhood. So we may have Bob who, when we look at his personality, he has these traits. But if Bob consciously looked at his life and said, do I want to keep these traits? He might've said, no, these hurt me. You know, I don't like keeping people pushed away. I want a close relationship consciously. My subconscious may not, but my conscious mind does. I don't want to infuse my potential conflicts with anger, but with openness and understanding and honesty and communication, not coming from this perspective. Like he may have these different dynamics where consciously his mind would look at some of these traits and qualities and say, I didn't volunteer my hand and raise my hand and say, I want that quality of being angry and, you know, projecting my anger onto others when I feel afraid. But until he introspects and looks at what currently exists in his subconscious programming, which is his self-identity, then he can't take a look and be like, I want to choose my life. I want to choose my qualities, choose my traits, have a purposeful direction going forward. Instead, these traits are running him on autopilot because until we reprogram what's not serving us, our subconscious mind is really the one directing our lives at the end of the day. So it sort of begs this like kind of philosophical idea or question, which is when we don't introspect and we don't get the opportunity to look at the traits that we have at a subconscious level and really see what's there and dive into the different layers of the self, then we haven't necessarily been granted the opportunity to consciously choose our identity. Usually our identity is made up of some really powerful, great things, but also some coping mechanisms that are the result of trauma or challenges where we adopted a coping mechanism, maybe at 6 years old, and maybe that 6-year-old coping mechanism worked for us then, but maybe way up in our 40s, that 6-year-old coping mechanism is no longer working. Take one more example. Let's say as a child, when you had unmet needs for emotional connection and attention, you threw a temper tantrum and your parents would come to you and be like, it's okay, calm down, give you some candy. So maybe as a child, your brain is like, ooh, temper tantrums. Your subconscious mind is like, temper tantrums work. They get my needs met. But once we have a program, it doesn't just change because our conscious mind sees that, oh, this is no longer functional in my adult life. Because it's a program, it's subconsciously wired in there. We can only change it when we actually actively rewire it. And so this is where we see people who may be in their 40s or in a boardroom meeting and they get upset and they throw an adult temper tantrum and they slam doors and throw their papers on the floor and raise their voice. And it's like, hey, that might've been a 6-year-old coping mechanism that you just didn't get the chance to reprogram yet. So it really begs this like philosophical question, which is, when we chose things out of trauma, when we were in a state of coping, and especially when we were coming from childhood experiences, we didn't necessarily get to choose our identity. Our identity was kind of chosen through trauma and adaptations we made. There are some beautiful adaptations that are going to be made in there too. So what we want to be able to do is consciously choose, hey, what's working for me and what will I choose to keep? And what's working kind of against me? And I want to reprogram and release. And when I learn what my needs are, when I can learn what my traits and coping mechanisms are, and I can work to nurture in the traits that are more valuable to me. So maybe I learned to throw away my boundaries as a child, because if I tried to set boundaries, I got in trouble or punished. Maybe in my adult life, I'm like, you know what? I'd actually like to become a little more assertive and speak up. And so this may be a very powerful place for nurturing, right? And if I can nurture in healthier traits and program in things I want to work on and expand, and then also release if I find that I have an overexpression of aggression when I get angry or feel attacked, instead of a healthy expression of aggression, which may be to strongly assert a boundary, then I may want to work on deprogramming, right? Reprogramming what's not serving me. So what we're going to do here today is we're going to look at an audit of all the layers to self, and we're going to look at what's serving us and what's not serving us. And then we're going to learn how to very proactively and effectively reprogram what's not serving, and program in more of what we would consciously like to implement more in our lives, whether it's certain needs that we want to get met more often, whether it's certain traits we want to express more often, whether it's certain values and morals that we need to consciously recognize and live by on a more regular basis, or whether it's old, outdated beliefs about ourselves, like this concept that I'm not good enough or that I'm unlovable that we don't want to carry with ourselves any longer. And we'll also look at our desires, our dreams, our coping mechanisms. And from that, what we can do is, because these are all the layers to the self, we can then consciously choose like, hey, these are the things that are important to me. And we can create like a loose mission and vision and purpose for our lives, and then proceed to check in with this and develop that more and more in detail over time. So until we do this introspective work, and until we really look at ourselves at a subconscious level, we don't get the full opportunity to choose who we want to become. Right? We kind of have the past that chose for us. And so this is a very important topic, because we all need the opportunity, I think, and deserve the opportunity as people to not have our past chosen for us that projects into our present and future by trauma, but instead by what we would consciously choose. And we can do that work to nurture in those things that are important to us. So this is what this is all about here. And when we have a stronger self-identity, the last thing I want to add before we go into all this stuff, when we have a stronger sense of self-identity, we have a much more effective way, an opportunity to self-soothe as a person. Because when I don't know what my self-identity is, what happens? Well, I feel triggered and I just buy into those old beliefs and stories. Or I feel triggered and I don't know that I have an unmet need and I don't know what those unmet needs are. So I can't do anything about it. Right? Or I get into a position where it's like, hey, I've got these fears going on and I don't realize that, hey, these are things I can reprogram. So when we have a stronger sense of self-identity, we know our boundaries, we know our needs, we know ourselves, we've trusted our ability to meet our own needs and show up for ourselves. And we know what types of things trigger us, and we have tools to work through them. And so by having a stronger sense of self-identity, we are not trying to derive our needs being met exclusively from the outside in, which when we do that, it makes it impossible to truly become good at self-soothing, right? We can all recognize with the more anxious attachment styles who have that clinginess and fear sometimes, how much whenever they feel triggered, they need to go from the outside in, because there isn't a strong relationship to self a lot of the time yet, right? It's like, if I know who I am, I know my needs, I know what triggers me, I know what I have to have conversations about, I can show up and support those things, and I have all the information I need to be better at self-soothing. So we're also going to talk a little bit about how we can implement that from that perspective as well. So the first thing is, we want to discover, like, am I in a chronic identity crisis? Am I in a position where I've recently been through a breakup? Am I in a position where I've recently been through a huge change, a loss of somebody important to me in my life? That will trigger a lot of the time, just an identity crisis in general, but a big divorce, right? A midlife crisis, all these things are just identity crises. But more than that, sometimes we can live in what I call a chronic identity crisis. And a chronic identity crisis is basically when we've never had the chance to figure out who we are, right? We've never had the chance to know what we really want. And so we're living kind of like, and not to say this in a negative way, but we're kind of living like half a life, right? Because it's like half our needs are going to be met, half the traits we really want to express are sometimes going to be in there or not. And everything's kind of random, which means you're not getting the real opportunity to have everything that really fulfills you, right? You're only going to ever feel fulfilled partway, because it's at random. It's based on like the environment you're around and the people you're around and if that works for you or not. And there's other components, because sometimes we'll know certain things about ourselves, right? But as a general rule, until we really know like our personal identity blueprint, we can struggle. So some symptoms of a chronic identity crisis, just if you're curious, and you can kind of like take a moment and rate where you are in here, like how many of these symptoms you see in yourself. And if you see a lot of these, you can kind of give yourself a score. So there's, let me just see here. There's like about 10 in general, and you can give yourself a score from 1 to 10. This is something that shows up for me. So one of the first ways of seeing a symptom of a chronic identity crisis, number one, is feeling unfulfilled in relationships. One of the biggest reasons we feel unfulfilled in relationships, and really without direction or understanding as to why, would be another like important component of that. And the reason is like, if we feel unfulfilled in relationships and we don't really know why, we just know relationships aren't working, they're not fulfilling, we usually don't know what we're needing, what our standards are, why it's not working. And so we don't have some clarity there, which means we don't have a lot of like information as to what to move towards. We just feel this like kind of chronic feeling of lack of fulfillment. Huge sign that you don't know your inner self to the degree that is possible. And so you're not getting the chance to share those needs with your partner and then get those needs met and feel good. Another big thing is if you feel like you are chronically unseen, unheard, and misunderstood by the people in your life around you, it may be related to a bit of a chronic identity crisis. Because again, if I feel unseen, unheard, misunderstood by all these people in my life, I'm probably not doing the best job of expressing myself. And I'm not saying like this against the person, right? Like it's not, I'm not saying it's your fault, but what's usually happening is there is some kind of prior trauma that you were victimized by that led you to have to split away or push away the relationship to yourself as a coping mechanism to get your needs met. But then there isn't this ability to come tune back into yourself and heal. So it just, the important component I want you to take away from this is that you have the power to change this if these things aren't working, right? So if you even have like a high score out of the next few points here that we're going to go through, that's perfectly fine. You have all the tools here that we're going to also go through to do a deeper dive into transforming some of these things. Number three is feeling like there's a lack of purpose in your life. And this can be regarding your purpose as a person, right? It could be like a spiritual purpose. It could be your career purpose. It could be your purpose as a parent, your purpose as a spouse. Just purpose in general, feeling like I don't really know what my purpose is and I've never really had an idea. And I've had a lot of people say to me over the years, like some people just don't ever know their purpose and they're not supposed to know, like not everybody's supposed to know their purpose. As a general rule, there's just a massive correlation between how much introspective work somebody has and how in touch somebody is with their inner reality. Like we don't like wake up and maybe philosophically, who knows, but we don't wake up and like, I woke up one morning and God told me my purpose. You know, it's not like so simple. What's usually happening for people who have a passionate direction they're moving towards is that they just know their needs a little more. They're a little more in touch with their inner world and they have enough clarity there that they feel confident moving in that direction. And so if we feel like we're purposeless or we don't know our purpose, it doesn't mean that you can't find it or that it's not there. And it also doesn't mean that your purpose is this like confined thing. Like your purpose is only ever this. Like your purpose can be to start off as a career in being an electrician and to reinvent yourself every decade and do three different careers over your life or four different careers over your life and love every single one of those things. And you lived a purposeful life in regards to your career. So purpose isn't like a confined destination. It's a passionate direction because we're in touch with our inner worlds. So our fourth point here, that you can score yourself. And again, score yourself from 0 to 1. Like if you kind of feel sort of a lack of purpose, you can give yourself 0.5. If you feel a huge lack of purpose, give yourself a 1. If you feel no lack of purpose and you're feeling confident and clear about your next moves and your direction and the things you're passionate about, give yourself a 0. The next one is no financial goals. Okay. So not having like clarity in terms of, and your financial goals don't have to be like to save all this money, to do all these things. But it can just be something that's personal to you because you've introspected that area of your life. Okay. Our next one is a lack of clarity on a daily basis and in general about how you want to construct your day. Okay. And again, it's not rigidity, but it's not obsolete. So it's not, I have to do everything from 8 till 9 a.m. that I decided and 9 till 10 p.m. that I decided, but just an intention. Like, hey, I see a general purpose to my life. And I know that this is how I want to show up today. That's going to feed into that purpose on some level. Okay. So if relationships are important to you and personal growth is important to you, you may have some little habits in there that feed into your purpose. If financial wealth building is important to you, you may have some stuff there that feeds into that purpose, budgeting, developing your second stream of income, whatever it might be. But you can see that there's this sense of purpose on a daily basis. That's kind of broken down to feed into the general whole. If we're missing that, there can be a little bit of a chronic identity crisis. Not feeling like you stick to things and see them through. And this is such a beautiful one when it comes to this, because usually this is a symptom of you're trying to do things that your subconscious mind is not aligned with. So your conscious mind is like, let's clean the garage. And your subconscious mind is like, yeah, but all I want to be doing is personal growth work. And you're not listening, right? And so you're not finding a way to align your conscious and subconscious mind. And instead you'll feel like you're caught in this kind of push-pull pattern. So if you're not feeling like you stick to things and see them through, it's usually a symptom of your conscious mind being like, I should be doing X, Y, Z. I should be showing up at this job every day that I don't like. I'm trying to consciously pressure myself. My subconscious is pulling me in a different direction because it has different needs And over time, your subconscious mind is going to start sabotaging. So this is usually why we'll see that we switch jobs a bunch, or we don't see things through or follow through. And it usually is the subconscious mind just pulling you in a different direction. From a spiritual perspective, because you'll see in here, we're kind of touching on the different areas of life. If you feel like you don't have in that area of life, just like something that's yours, right? Something that you have a habit around. If we have no spiritual beliefs, or we just don't believe in God or a higher power, that's perfectly, perfectly acceptable and totally fine. But we can look at spirituality as like values or morals, right? It can be like, I believe in God and I like to meditate and journal and read different texts and different books and just kind of explore. It can be that you identify with some kind of religion in particular, or it can be that you don't have a religious viewpoint or spiritual viewpoint at all, but you're like, hey, for me, spirituality is about being kind, being compassionate, being honest, being in integrity to myself. So just having something, because that's one of our seven areas of life. And that is an intrinsic part of the holistic view of ourselves as a human being. So feeling kind of unexamined in that area of life, or really any area of life, can keep us in that little bit of an identity crisis. And then not knowing what you're actually passionate about. Okay. Passionate about learning about, passionate about, you know, growing in a specific area around. And then another big thing is feeling like we are emotionally unfulfilled. Okay. So if there's a sense of like lack of emotional fulfillment, and we just don't feel rewarded, we just don't feel interested, engaged in our lives, all of these things tend to be symptoms of being in a chronic identity crisis. So let me just count and make sure I did the right number. So 3, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay. So there's 9 there in case anybody's looking for the 10th. So give yourself a score out of 9 and just see like, how am I showing up here? And if you have a high score, like, okay, there's definitely a lack of a strong sense of self. Then all you have to do is realize, hey, this is just a call to like doing deeper work on myself, understanding these components. And then I get the opportunity to choose how I want to show up in these different areas instead of the past choosing for me and just creating a kind of randomized output. Now, one other thing, what you can add like almost a 10th point in there that's really specific is if you find in your relationships, you're constantly deriving your needs being met just from the outside in, right? Just feeling like I'm trying to get my needs met from the outside in, codependency, enmeshment, those sorts of patterns, absolute signs of identity crises going on at a chronic level and pervasive level, but maybe not to a really strong degree, just pervasive lower level, like a 3 out of 10 instead of a 10 out of 10, but more pervasively. So why does this happen? Well, when we get classically conditioned, when we grow up and we get socialized, we get basically trained to be far away from who we are and what we truly want to become, right? We get trained to be the pleasers of our parents, to fit into our environment, to grow up. So there's nothing wrong with this. Like, this is very common for people. It doesn't make you bad or defective or anything like this. But what it does mean is, hey, this is a call for us to tune into ourselves a little bit more and to do deeper work that says, hey, I can do a deep dive. I can figure out what these things are for me, the components I want to ingrain in myself a little bit more and show up for those things over time. So I feel purposeful, you know, on purpose, clear, and congruent with how I want to live. So when it comes to these major areas, okay, one of the first major areas, like we said, is needs. Okay. We have needs as human beings, and every single person has needs. These are not escapable things. Sometimes we can pretend and we can do things like spiritual bypassing and try to escape from our needs or pretend that we don't have needs, but everybody's getting their needs met on a regular basis. Your brain is designed to meet your needs. It's just going to meet those needs in a variety of different forms. So what's very powerful to do, and I'm not going to go through a whole bunch of need stuff here today, but this is like a call to take the time here, is we have our needs course. And when you want to discover your needs, there's a few components that you want to look at. You want to look at your 6 basic human needs and sort of understand what tends to drive you at a 6 basic human needs level. And then you want to look at your personality needs. And if you look in the charts in those workbooks, you'll see that there are examples of all of them. And then your tertiary needs, which are kind of your moment to moment needs, like little things like feeling seen, feeling heard, feeling like somebody's present, feeling connected. Like those would be sort of in the relationship area in terms of needs. And what you want to be able to do is take some time to look at like what needs are most important to you. And what needs do you feel the best when they are fulfilled? And you can simply just look at those worksheets and just circle the things that pop out to you. And a lot of people, when they're trying to first work on their needs, and this is honestly, I know a lot of you guys have done needs work in here. and we're not going to spend too much time on needs here because there's so many other layers we're going to focus on, but check in with your needs every 3 months. Like, our needs will change and evolve and pivot a little bit over time. And usually when we feel off, we feel more depleted than usual. We feel more reactive to things, a little ungrounded. Usually all of these things are examples of times where we just have unmet needs that we haven't realized are existing in the background. And when we don't consciously realize what our unmet needs are, then our subconscious mind will call to us through agitation, aggravation, fear, low-level anxiety, frustration, feeling unfulfilled. All of these emotions are just pieces of feedback to let you know, hey, something's out of alignment with your needs, check back in. And you can ask yourself, like, what needs feel met in my life? What needs feel unmet? What are strategies I can show up to execute these needs more regularly? And there's this kind of quote or idea where it's like, you are who you want to become, right? It's like, you are who your conscious mind chooses rather than your subconscious mind's choice. Okay. So what you can do is, as sort of a needs exercise, there's some steps that you can do. If you're working on this area of your life, you can go into the needs course. You can go into the back of the workbook in that course. There's actually, by the way, in the self-identity course, they're actually all laid out there for you as well. So you can just go into the self-identity course or even pull up the workbook if you're following along right now. And what you would do is you would circle the needs that are most important to you, like ideally your top 10 or 15 on the tertiary needs list. Like, what are the things that show up for me the most? If you have a hard time identifying, just circle the ones that you see yourself the most and go back and try to rate them from 1 to 10. And you'll see, like, hey, you know what? Feeling understood rates a little bit higher than feeling a sense of organization or structure on a daily basis. Okay. So you'll be able to sort of like see what's priority for you. And then you can do the same thing for your personality needs. Okay. So if you look at the personality needs worksheet, what are your top personality needs that stand out to you? And how are you feeling, you know, in terms of those things being met? And then we do this. Okay. And this is what's different from just needs discovery. Okay. And so this is where you want to pay like very close attention. When you look into the future, what needs do you want to have? Okay. And because remember, a lot of these needs get chosen from what? From trauma, right? So maybe we have this really high need for approval because maybe we didn't get it from mom and dad. The vast majority of the time, we shouldn't like bulldoze our own personality needs too often. But what you can look at is how to create balance in all of the 7 areas of life and how to like organize your subconscious mind a little bit more so that you have needs that are fulfilling you in many areas and that are creating homeostasis and balance. And so what this would look like, for example, is if you have your highest needs as approval and comfort, for example, and your conscious mind says, hey, but one of the things I really want to work on in my future, and I am who I want to become, my conscious mind wants to be somebody who steps outside of my comfort zone, wants to be somebody who, you know, cares less about what people think. Well, what you can do is there's some reprogramming you can do to build in healthier relationships to things that meet those needs instead. So what this would look like, and let's use the examples of approval and comfort. Maybe you realize I want to care less about what people think. So to stop that need from having as much power over you, if you want to be moving in a different direction and nurturing new things into your subconscious rather than these components of self maybe chosen as a result of trauma or unprocessed emotion from the past, you could look at what is the cost of focusing too much on approval on a regular basis? What are the downsides? Okay. And so on a regular basis, as part of your reprogramming, as it relates to your needs, you would just write out 10 or 15 downsides of approval. Okay. Like seeking approval on a regular basis. So you would look at things like, hey, I self-abandon, I outsource my power, I start caring more about what other people think than what I think, I abandon myself, then I fear being abandoned in relationships more because I'm already abandoning myself and it's becoming a wound. And you would look at the downsides on a regular basis. And we know the subconscious mind is reprogrammed through repetition plus emotion. So what you want to do is you want to feel that, right? What does it feel like? And you want to get really specific and try to visualize as much as you can as well. If you want to move the needle more quickly, you can sit and you can think about a time that I sought approval and it caused me pain. And you would close your eyes and think of that time. Maybe you were with an ex partner or, you know, and maybe you were standing in your kitchen and you saw the scene play out and how it made you feel. And what you're doing is you're using your conscious mind to speak to your subconscious mind, communicate to your subconscious mind in its language, which is emotion and imagery, and through repetition. And on a repetitive basis, look at some of the cost of that. And what you're doing is you're like disconnecting from that need being so prevalent, so strong. Okay. And so that you would repeat for about 21 days or so, if you really want to move the needle and have like a bit of a shift in your needs hierarchy. That would be for something like that. Then let's say on the other side, you would look at what would be the benefits of not caring so much about what people think, about choosing to do things that are, you know, in my truth, more aligned for me. And you might visualize yourself and see yourself having better conversations with people because you get to talk about stuff you're truly interested in. You might visualize yourself being more heard by the people around you because you're not violating your boundaries to gain approval. You're honest. You're showing up more authentically in your relationships. You're seeing your needs through. You feel more connected to people as a result. So you, and what we're doing here is we're just shifting our balance of positive versus negative emotional associations because this is really how our brain is making decisions at the end of the day. So when we can tie some more negative emotional associations to something that's not serving us that much and more positive emotional associations to something we would like to see instead, we tip the scales and we can sort of shift the hierarchy of our needs a little bit. And you would do the same thing for comfort, right? How I feel brave, courageous, strong, empowered. I'm growing all the time, moving outside of my comfort zone. But I was staying in my comfort zone, might feel cozy in the short-term version and short-term gratification, but over time it leads to X, Y, Z problems. Okay. And sort of feeling about those things on a regular basis. And we're shifting our needs hierarchy ever so slightly. You can do this with any needs, right? Your tertiary needs, your personality needs. And you don't want to like bulldoze yourself because these are needs and they're important to have there for a certain reason, but we can rebalance consciously our own subconscious mind's programming. Does this make sense so far? Because we're about to do a lot more of this stuff. Okay, perfect. So this is the needs part, okay? We've got a lot of other ones we're going to do in here. So number one is the needs. Number two is our traits, okay? And if you want to do a deeper dive and follow along, you can actually pull up in your self-identity course. There's a traits worksheet at the back of your workbook, like a whole list of a whole bunch of different traits. But traits often develop from conditioning as well. Right? So we may learn, for example, that if we try to express intelligence as a child, that intelligence gets love from our two parents who really value intelligence. So we may end up really, you know, worshiping this part of ourselves and really working on this part of ourselves, intelligence, reading books, building intelligence, just so we are all honest and clear, the traits we get and nurture into ourselves in our lives are because these traits get our needs met in some form. So if you get love and connection when you have expressed intelligence and you do well at school as a kid, well, you're trying to nurture that. I mean, there's parts, of course, we have like genetic predispositions towards things, but a huge part of like our programming just comes from the fact that we try to focus in on honing in on things that get our needs met. If I express empathy, like for me personally, as a child, I saw a lot of chaos in the home. And when I showed up and was there for my parents and expressed care and showed up to help them with their problems, I got love. And so we can have these things where like, those are good traits. And we're not here to say, oh, because that came from a challenging experience, it's bad. Because a lot of people ask me this, and that's not what we're here to work on. If we have things that are working for us and we consciously appreciate and like about ourselves, we're here to do things that fulfill us, right? We're here to choose what we would like. So it doesn't mean we like get rid of things that we think are working for us or are parts of ourselves we value. We're here to look at the things that are not, right? So let's say instead, as a child, personally, I also learned that when I had boundaries, I was bad, right? I was challenging my authority figure parents, and that's not good and it's not okay. And I got punished or I was made to feel unsafe. And so coping mechanism, I am just going to be people pleasing and I'm not going to have good boundaries. And then what would we find as a fearful avoidant? What does the fearful avoidant do? Well, eventually you can't sustain that. And you come out over aggressively in certain forms when it's been repressed for too long. So this would be a good example of, hey, this is something good to be working on. So it would look like I'm going to practice nurturing and more assertiveness in my life in a healthy way and learning to assert and speak up on a regular basis, which I've done a lot of work on. So you're looking to be able to nurture in what you see serves you and reprogram what's no longer serving you. So how do we do this when it comes to traits? Well, first you want to know that traits are not good or bad. Everything has its place, but it's really the imbalance of the expression of a trait that can be unhealthy, right? Like if we have no emotional expression, if we have excessive fun seeking at the expense of taking personal responsibility, the extreme expressions of traits can be the things that become problematic, right? So what we're trying to look at is, it's wonderful when traits are serving us, and we're trying to look at what traits aren't serving us and what we want to nurture more into our lives instead. So you can actually take a look. And I would ask you guys first, like, have you guys ever reflected on different traits in the relationship to yourself? And have you ever taken a look at, like, what traits do I express, and what traits would I like to express more of, and what traits would I like to express less of? And what I found for people that's so interesting, and this is something I actually found myself as well, is when we go to somebody and we say, hey, what are, let's say we write out the traits that we think we have. And then we go to like the five closest people around us. This is a fun exercise to do if you're interested in your free time. If you go to the five closest people around you, so your five closest friends or friends and family members or whoever it might be, and you say, like, what are the traits you see in me? And like, what are the top 10 traits you would circle for me, for example, on the traits list in the workbook? Usually I find that we have a different experience. Like we have different traits that there'll be some similarities for sure, but oftentimes like how we see ourselves and how other people see us, we can sort of like recognize sometimes we have blind spots in seeing our different traits. I just wanted to pop in here and let you know we are doing a 7-day free trial to the All Access Membership Pass at PDS, which means you get access to literally everything inside of the school. And this includes the 4 live webinars I do with our students every single week. You can come in, you can ask me questions with your camera on, we can chat. You can leave your camera off if you prefer, or type your questions in the chat. There's lots of opportunity to get your questions answered. And on top of that, you get access to all of our different courses. We have over 55 different courses on relationships, communication, boundaries, emotional mastery, guilt and shame, learning your needs, so many different facets that are really important to master our lives and feel really good about our lives going forward. And last but not least, there's a daily community event, whether it's practicing communication or doing a guided morning routine or a guided reprogramming exercise. We have trained facilitators and coaches who are in there doing that work, showing up to support you on your journey every single day. I would love to see you on the other side. There's lots of exciting stuff in there. And we have had a 99.7% NPS score, which means we have literally that many people who report being really successful at PDS. Please join me on the other side. Come check it out. See if it's a fit for you. I'd love to see you there. Go ahead and sign up by clicking the link in the description box below. So traits are like things like being adaptable, being adventurous, being athletic, being calm, feeling like you are caring. Like these are the specific traits. And there's, again, a whole list if you're looking to do a deeper dive and look in your workbook. And what you want to do from here is you want to ask yourself, like, what are the things that are working for me? Circle the traits that are quote unquote positive that are working for you. And then what traits are not working so well for me? So what traits do I have expressed in an unhealthy form? So, you know, I want to be clear that everything serves a little bit. Like if we have the trait of aggression, if we look at it through like a polarized lens, yeah, like if you're going to be aggressive to your friends all the time, that's not really the healthiest thing. But if you're going to be aggressive when you're protecting your child from something dangerous, that serves a little bit, right? Or when you have to assert yourself and somebody's trying to violate your boundaries over and over again, there can be really, you know, important components to that. So I can read off some traits, and I want you guys just to take a moment and see what traits show up for you. There's many, many, many. It can go on for a very long time. But try to see, like, what traits do you see in yourself, and what traits do you see yourself wanting to improve in the relationship to self and like nurture in more? And what traits do you see yourself wanting to reprogram a little bit? And then I'm going to take you through some steps. I'm just going to read them for example's sake. Okay. So active, adaptable, and you can sort of like rate these things from 1 to 10. Agreeable. Okay. Agreeable is usually a good one for insecure attachment styles. Like, do you have parts of you that are so agreeable? And maybe it serves you on one side because you seem to get along with everybody except for the relationship to yourself, right? Adventurous, articulate, athletic, balanced, calm. Okay. And as you're hearing some of these, try to notice if there's anything where you're like, oh, I'm kind of imbalanced. Like I don't have enough balance in my life. I feel kind of like I do things in such extremes. And this may be a trait you want to nurture in a little bit more, right? Caring, charismatic, charming, cheerful, clever. And what you can see in here too, as I'm reading some examples, is how these traits probably got your needs met in some form growing up, right? If you got love when you were cheerful, then maybe as a child, you learned to adapt these different things. If we have these things that are serving us, this is great, okay? And so I can go on and on for quite some time, but what I want to teach you guys the principles today, not doing the actual work, because each exercise will take some time. What you want to be able to do is take a look and be like, okay, now I understand what traits are. That's the point I want you to sort of see. And when you look at what your traits are, what is serving me, what's not? And the things that are not serving you, here are the steps you want to do to reprogram. Okay. It's following the very similar pattern. You would look at what are the downsides of when I express this trait. Okay, so we're going to keep it simple with traits because I notice people get a little bit confused with traits sometimes. What are the downsides of, we'll use the example of aggression again. What are the downsides when I'm overly aggressive to my boss or when I'm overly aggressive to a friend when I feel like the boundary is violated or when I'm overly aggressive to my partner when I feel triggered or upset? What are the downsides? And what you're doing is at some point you got this program that was programmed to see more upsides than downsides. Now we have to use our conscious mind to reprogram the balance of positive versus negative emotional associations because the brain is wired to avoid pleasure and seek pain. So if we think being aggressive saved us in childhood and helped us defend ourselves against bullies or bullying parents or whatever it might be, we might go, aggression is good. It keeps me safe. And we may still have this programming that thinks that this is more good than bad. So we're trying to just balance it out a little bit so we can bring the trait into balance at the same time. Does this make sense so far? Good. So you would look at this and you go, okay, so what are the downsides of aggression? And for, 21 days or so, and you can pick like a few traits at the same time. It doesn't have to be like one thing each of the 21 days, but you might pick the top three traits that you want to release a little bit or bring less of into your life and look at the downsides of those traits and write out what it costs you to express this trait too often or too strongly or too frequently. And look at what it costs. You can use prompts by looking at all of the seven areas of life. What does it cost me to be too aggressive in my career? What does it cost me to be too aggressive when it comes to money? When it comes to friendships, family relationships, romantic relationships, right? And you would go through and look at the different areas of life. And what are the upsides of nurturing an opposing trait? Okay. So what would be an opposing trait to aggression? Maybe it's patience. Maybe it's peacefulness. Maybe it's calm. So you want to pick something that opposes that. And again, in your traits list, you have both. And you want to actually take the time to be like, what are the upsides of expressing this more often? Okay. So let's say it's patience instead of aggression. What would it feel like to be patient? Well, I'd have less neurochemical reactions that are negative, like cortisol and norepinephrine. And I would have the opportunity to work through things better in conversations with people. I would practice more humility in my life as a result. And I might have more connected relationships where I listen to other people and their needs. I may learn from other people because of doing this. So you're going to look on a regular basis at the benefits of these new opposing traits and the drawbacks or costs of hyper-focusing on these traits that may have served you at some point in time, but maybe your conscious mind doesn't want to keep going through this at a subconscious level any longer to the same degree. And then what do we do? Well, traits have another follow-up part. It's the practice of the actual expression of them. And it's done through exposure response. Okay. So we want to like weigh the emotional associations, balance them out. And then we want to practice these traits. Okay. So if it's assertiveness, let's pretend let's say we're going to practice assertiveness because before we were too agreeable. Okay. We're trying to make the balance. Well, step one, I would be like, well, what are the drawbacks of being too agreeable? I feel unseen. I feel unheard. I feel taken advantage of. I push people away and don't trust people when I feel taken advantage of. And you'd feel all the things and repeat the things. So you see the cost. Then you'd be like, and what are the upsides of being assertive? The opposite of the agreeable. Well, I'll feel like I can protect myself. I'll feel seen. I'll feel heard. I feel like I can stand up for myself. I'll feel like my needs are met more often in my life. I'll feel safer going around in the world. So you all the upsides. And then it's, what are my strategies to practice being more assertive on a daily basis? Okay. And what I recommend when you're trying to focus on nurturing in a new trait or a new quality that your conscious mind wants to have more of in your life, you want to just pick one thing per day that you will do. So in the example of assertiveness, it would be, where's one place I can assert myself every single day? And you can pick it as part of your morning routine. Maybe it's like, hey, I notice that my boss keeps dumping all this work on my plate at work, and I have to assert that I need a little more boundaries with my workload. And so Monday, I'm going to talk to my boss. I'm going to say, hey, you know, I love working here. I really enjoy this job. I feel a little overwhelmed, and I need you to help to delegate things to other people in our workplace instead of just putting it on me, because I'm feeling overwhelmed and I don't want to get burnt out. Okay. So that's your Monday. Tuesday, do you have a boundary to set with a brother of yours, a boundary to set with a parent, a boundary to set with a friendship, a boundary to set with somebody that deals with money in your life? Maybe you share finances and somebody keeps infringing on your budget. Maybe it's your spouse or one of your children. And it's like, good, you're going to pick a little thing to assert every day and have a conversation about. You're going to practice. And it's called exposure response, right? So through repetition and emotion, as we expose ourselves, we actually ingrain this trait. We fire and wire it into our lives and into our subconscious minds a little bit more. And so by rebuilding our emotional associations and then practicing traits, we are now nurturing things into our lives that we see as being powerful things that we are consciously choosing instead of trauma choosing for us who we are and what we become. Okay. So that's our trait component. And by the way, as we're going through all these major areas, you can just take some time and you can like pick out what areas you want to do the most working on. Like if you're like, you know what, I don't really know my needs, or I have this set of needs that's, you know, not always working for what I want to become in the future. If you're like, I want to be somebody who finally explores the world and tries things, but my highest needs are comfort and security, you may want to work on your needs, emotional associations a little bit more, and seeing the benefits of adventure, seeing the benefits of stretching yourself outside of your comfort zone, seeing some of the drawbacks of being too invested in comfort and security all the time. So, you know, if it's a needs thing and you are who you want to become, I want to become an adventurous person who puts myself in new situations, who experiences, who explores. That's what my conscious mind wants, but my subconscious keeps holding me back. Focus on your needs. If you're like, oh my gosh, I have these traits where I don't show up in certain ways, I'm boundaryless, I'm agreeable, and I need to become a little more assertive. And that's a huge thing for me that's costing me a lot of my life. Work on the traits, right? So you're going to work on reprogramming based on what stands out for you on a regular basis. Our next big thing is our values and morals. And I find this to be like a really powerful thing that's so overlooked for people. And the reason that I think values and morals are super important, and while we may not recognize the importance of values and morals on a daily basis, we will recognize the importance of our values and morals when it comes to tough decisions in our lives as a whole. So let me give you an example. Let's say you are working at a company, okay? And let's say you're in a position when you work at the company where your boss is like, hey, I am going to give you this raise, but I need you to get this person fired, even though it's not really possible for their contract. I need you to make something up and say that they did the wrong thing, but if you do it, I'm going to give you the raise. And maybe, let's say it's Bob. Maybe you're Bob and you are struggling to pay the bills for your children, right? And you're struggling to pay the bills and put food on the table. In a hard bind, which as humans, we will go through these hard times and hard decision-making moments. If you don't consciously know your values and morals ahead of time, you're likely to get into a position where you may make decisions consciously subconsciously that actually violate your conscious mind's direction, purpose, things that you would want to abide by to be the person that you want to become. And so our values and morals are these really strong grounding elements of our life during challenging times and challenging moments. And when we know our values and morals, and when we can actually take a moment and like tap into them and tune into them and know what they are, we can pull from that extra bit of strength, and we can pull from this clarity of knowing, no, I'm a person who operates from integrity. I'm not a person who does dishonest things for money. And so I'm going to show up and operate that way. And it keeps us in a place where we stay in alignment. We are less likely significantly less likely to make decisions in our lives that we end up regretting later. And it's a very powerful North Star when we feel emotional and we feel challenged. But you know, we want to make sure that we don't go into a space of regret long-term for the decisions we make. So just some like examples of values and morals, again, they're in that workbook of the self-identity course, are things like acceptance, compassion, honesty, courage, equality, empathy, fidelity, forgiveness, generosity, humility. Like there, we can go on for quite some time, but these are like, you can look in your list and these are things that are going to be really important for you to know about yourself. And what I recommend is just picking like a top three or four. And if you're in a position where you are not operating by this. Okay. So let me give you an example of a client. I remember I worked with this client and he was like this, you could tell he had a really good heart, but he went through a tremendous amount of trauma as a kid. And he was like super FA, leaning really strongly DA. And he lied a lot, like to the point where when I was working with him, sometimes it was a little challenging for me because I wasn't even sure sometimes like how often what he was saying was true. And it made it difficult to know, like, what should I help him with and help him reprogram? Because like, there's so many things he's saying and his stories don't always match up. And like, I really wanted to help him. And I could tell it was like just deep trauma, right? I could tell. And like, he had his mother was a narcissist. His dad left when he was really young. So he got raised by just this one mother who was super narcissistic, like very volatile narcissist as well, like very abusive, would have these extreme punishments. And you could tell a lot of his dishonesty was focused in around like trying to make himself worthy, like playing up things or telling these big tall tales about himself to sort of like be worthy of something. And then also huge lies that you could tell were like him avoiding seeming like a bad person. And what I knew really clearly and what was so obvious is like, this is his subconscious mind just like terribly afraid of punishment. And so he's afraid to seem bad because what if he gets in trouble in some form, right? So he would, if he did something that he was trying to kind of share in a session, he'd be like, I did this, but that it wasn't quite like that. And you could tell it was kind of moved around and the story would change maybe from week to week, but it was because he was so terrified of seeming like a bad person. Because if you're a child who gets a lot of punishment, your subconscious mind is going to associate bad with punishment. And you have like, it's like Pavlov's dogs, right? You get a conditioned response to like compulsively move away from that situation and hide. And so I could see this, and this would be this is a really clear example, like a more extreme example. But at one point I approached him and I said, you know, listen, like I think you've got a great heart. I think it's so powerful that you've been through so much and you're here and you're doing the work. And you're doing the work to, you know, work through so much trauma and so many things, but I would be dishonest with you if I didn't tell you that sometimes your stories are shifting and it's really going to be important for your healing and for you to receive support if you work on installing more honesty into your life. And if you work work to actually like ingrain that more as a moral and a value. And he was like, okay, I can see that. And I was like, great, we're off to a great start. And so what it is, right, is at some point we dismissed a trait because it wasn't serving us. And you can see in his example, he dismissed the trait of honesty because that wasn't going to help him stay safe with an abusive parent, right? You have to lie to get out of stuff because your abusive parent is going to hurt you at any snap of a finger. It's really scary. And so you can see how we develop like a disconnect from certain morals and values because of the way that our subconscious mind copes, right? It's all just conditioning. And so what we can do is recondition, right? We can use the same principles. So what we looked at is what are all the downsides of lying? And we did a lot of work around it. And on a regular basis, he did some like repatterning around it on a daily basis. What are the downsides? I don't really get to connect with people. I can't build trust in my relationships. I'm not allowing myself to be seen and to be vulnerable. I'm not allowing myself to have the beautiful opportunity as a human being to make mistakes, to have a conversation and to still receive love and connection despite having just made a mistake, which I think is a beautiful part of like deep connection and relationships, is to be accepting of each other in challenging moments. So we wrote all these things. What are the downsides, right? You see, and I hope you see the pattern here, right? We're going through each area. We're looking at the downsides, the things we don't want, the cost, right? Because it gives us a repetition and emotion of balancing our emotional associations. It makes our brain want to move in a new direction. So what are the downsides of being dishonest? And what are the upsides of honesty, right? It allows me to make a mistake and own it. It allows me to develop more courage. It allows me to be accepted as a person with flaws, which is part of the human experience and how I'll actually feel more unconditionally loved. It allows me to take ownership and responsibility for things in my life so I can continuously grow. So we look at the upsides, right? And what do those upsides look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, right? If I'm the person who took responsibility instead of hid, how much more do I have the opportunity to develop in my life as a human being? So we rebalance and then we do a little bit of exposure work around honesty. Okay. And that can look like, so that's one example that can look like you going and having honest conversations with people from the past where you didn't. Sometimes that can be a scary place to start, or just you noticing that when you have this urge to be dishonest or go against a trait a moral or a value that you want to implement in your life, that you actually pivot and practice doing something different, right? And it's a little bit of exposure work. You would start with it intentionally, because when we're trying to ingrain new morals, values, traits, it can be a little more hard to do in real time, right? So it would look more like, let's say that you have a tendency at work to tell your boss, I'm doing great. Everything's going fine. Meanwhile, you're falling behind and you need help and you're scared to like let them know and seem like you look bad. The practice would be, okay, I know I'm falling behind. So today, when my boss asks me if I need help, I'm going to be honest and say yes. Right. So it's like, how can I come up with strategies to practice this trait more often? And it's a repetition and emotion that reprograms. Okay. So I want you guys to see the theme so far. We're going to keep going through different areas, but I want you guys to see the theme so far. We have different parts of the self, different layers to self, our traits, our needs, our morals, our values, a whole bunch of other things we're going to continue talking about. We want to look at our lives, see what's not working for us that we didn't volunteer for in childhood. I didn't say, yes, I want to be so agreeable and dismiss my boundaries for life and then feel resentful of everybody. But I learned that as a coping mechanism as a result of trauma. So I want to look at, hey, what acquired traits, morals, values, qualities, needs do I have that are maybe more trauma rooted? And then I want to look at, well, how can I release those things that are not serving me? What do I start by doing? A cost benefit analysis. Okay. It's designed to create repetition and emotion to make more negative associations to what's not serving. So you're using your conscious mind to communicate to your subconscious, break those more positively oriented associations. And let me just get really clear here for an example. When somebody's struggling with addiction, right? Your conscious mind is like, this is horrible, right? But your subconscious mind is like, has in the original imprinting of whatever that addiction was, substance or alcohol or whatever, or behavior, your subconscious mind said, this gives me more pleasure than pain. We get those programs. And then sometimes those are not working for us any longer in the future. Sometimes we go, oh my gosh, this addiction, maybe it helped me cope when I was 15 years old and it helped me survive my environment. But now that I'm in my 50s and my spouse has divorced me and I've lost access to my kids, I'm seeing that this is something tearing my life apart. Well, what's happened is you just have more positive oriented emotional associations than negative to this old substance or habit that's meeting your needs. So it's like, we're going to reprogram those emotional associations, use our conscious mind to speak to our subconscious mind and see, look, all the pain, all the cost, all that's there repetitively. So we balance the scales and then we go into, okay, now how do I practice doing new things? Okay. So it's just following the same principles of reprogramming. So in our lives with the trait, it's like, hey, this trait of being aggressive when I feel upset served me as a kid, but now I see the negatives. I see the positives of being more patient or something opposing it. And then I practice that patience on a regular basis. So I'm programming it in. Okay. So we've got these same patterns. We've got the patterns for our needs. We've got the patterns for our traits. We've got the patterns for our values and morals. And then we want to have the patterns about the stories we carry about ourselves in the seven areas of life. Okay. So this is simple reprogramming. This is just going to be like belief reprogramming, but it's very powerful to look at not necessarily just core beliefs, but if we look at the seven areas of life, you would look at what are my stories about myself and my career. Okay. And they don't have to just be core beliefs. This is an extremely valuable exercise to practice. What are my stories about myself and my career? Usually I hear things from people, like I'll give you some examples. There's some examples in that workbook too, but there's an example could be, I always fail at the last minute. I've heard people say that. I can't sustain success. Things will go really well and then I always mess them up. I don't work well under pressure. People don't get along with me in my career. I always have problems at work. I don't work well with other people, right? So we hear like, these aren't necessarily core beliefs. These are just ideas we've acquired over time, probably because of some painful past experience we didn't get to process. And when we have these beliefs and concepts about ourselves, because our subconscious mind wants to maintain your comfort zone, and because it associates that maintaining your comfort zone gives you safety and survival, then whatever ideas you have at a subconscious level that are a part of your identity subconsciously, you're on a path to recreating over and over and over again. So until we surface these things to the level of conscious mind and reprogram them, you're on a one-track trajectory towards seeing this again and again and again. And you can look back on your life and you'll see that this is normally the case. I can't trust people in my career. Then you look at the financial area of life. What are your stories about money? Is it that, and by the way, there can be so many about career. And again, you've got some of that stuff in your workbook. It with money, is it like, I never have enough money? Is it I'm bad with money? I can't earn more money. I can't save money. There can be endless stories, but what I want you to be able to do as a person that's super important is take some time. Like, this is going to be one of the more important things we do so that we can be fulfilled in our life. We can have passionate purpose, direction, success in the things that actually fulfill us. And we can shed these old things that we acquired that we didn't want or didn't ask for. And take the time. And there's actually 40 major money beliefs in the subconscious minds. I always forget the titles of the courses because our team renames them, but it's like the Money Mastery course. It's like your subconscious mind and its relationship to money. There's 40 limiting beliefs in there that I found to be most common. You can check in there if you find you have a lot of problems or challenges in the financial area of life. But what's really powerful to do is sit with one area. And what I would highly recommend is pick one area per evening for a week or every other evening for 2 weeks or whatever it might be. And just audit, like, what are my stories? What are my patterns in this area? Do I find myself self-sabotaging my relationship to money? Do I find myself making money and then being scared that people are jealous of me and then sabotaging it because I'm prioritizing emotional connection at the subconscious level? Do I find myself getting into a position where I think people are always going to take advantage of me? I give my money all away to people and then I do that at the expense of myself. Do I like, and you want to look at all the different patterns you have in each major area of life. And those patterns are going to be stories that you acquired over time that are part of your subconscious identity that you probably didn't choose and that are running your behaviors on an ongoing basis, whether you know it or not. And it's like that quote from Carl Jung. He says, until we make the subconscious conscious, it will direct our lives and we will call it fate. And it's true. So go through each area, career, financial, mental. What are your beliefs about your own mental capacity? I'm a slow learner. I don't do well in school. I'm not that smart. I don't really have my own opinions and ideas, or people will reject me if I do. Like, what are your stories about yourself in each area? Emotionally, I can't manage my emotions. I don't know how to feel my emotions. It's too late. If I express emotions, I'm going to be weak. Like, what are your concepts? What are your self-concepts? Mental, emotional, spiritual. So we did career, financial, mental, emotional, spiritual. Do you think that it's shameful to have a spiritual belief? It's embarrassing. People won't understand me. I should repress it. I'm not smart if I have some kind of belief because I believe in something that's not proven by science. What are your beliefs, right? And is anything working for you or is anything working against you? That's what you're looking for, the things that are specifically working against you. So career, financial, mental, emotional, spiritual, physical. This is a huge one for people. What are your beliefs about your body, your physical health, your vitality, your energy, your physical appearance, right? Like, and what are your beliefs about how you should be or how you have to be or how you'll never be? And what's working for you, what's working against you. And again, until we consciously choose these things, they're going to be directing us on autopilot throughout the course of our lives. And that's not a very nice thing to feel, right? We're not consciously in control. Our programming that mom gave me from, 29 years ago, whatever it is, when I was a kid growing up in my household, that's running my life still, right? And like, what you want to look at is, if you're in this position where you have some old story that I'm never going to save money, and if you got that from your father who always was in lack, maybe you're 38 years old today and you're sitting here and your dad is still running your life, right? It's like, until we reprogram these things, that person who imprinted us is still has power over our how we feel about ourselves, our beliefs about ourselves, our decisions, our behaviors, our emotions. So we want to audit and really look at what are my self-concepts in each of the seven areas. What do I believe about myself in this area? And you can kind of reflect on the things that come up for you over the course of a week, over the course of a year. You can even spend like a day being like, today I'm going to notice my patterns around money. I'm going to notice how I feel when I go to buy things at the supermarket. I'm going to notice how I feel when I have to pay a bill. I'm going to just observe myself in each of these seven areas and notice what like feelings and self-concepts and experiences come up for me. And then what I can do, what those stories are. And then what we can do to reprogram them. So you can observe how I am with money one day, when I go to spend money, when I go to look at my bills, when I look at my online banking, when I pay or look at my bank statements, how I operate in my career throughout the day. What do I notice triggers me when I go to work? What do I notice I'm afraid of? What do I notice limits me? What do I avoid? And just observing yourself. It's one of the most important things we'll ever do. So doing that for each major area of life, very powerful. And then what do? Well, we want to be able to go, cool, I see the things that are not serving. I'm going to reprogram them. So I am consciously choosing my future, my life, my fate, instead of my subconscious trauma choosing it for me. And so then we go into, okay, great. So what do I want to change? And all we have to do is create new self-concepts that oppose and look for proof. So no different than belief reprogramming in the emotional mastery course, but you would look at in my career, for example, do I want to believe I can succeed instead of I will be a failure? And so for 21 days, we're just looking for proof. We're feeding that new story because through repetition and emotion, we get new programming. And so we might go, why is it possible that I will succeed? Well, I show up for work every day. I've been able to hold down a job. I have these qualities and traits that help me do well. I can learn. I can communicate. I can work on myself. I can, you know, so you're looking at these different dynamics and you're seeing why it's possible for you to be a success instead of a failure, why it's possible for you to have money instead of constantly lack money, why it's possible for you to earn more money instead of always feel stuck at a glass ceiling. And what you're going to find is because you have a reticular activating system in your brain, your RAS, it's going to start filtering out information according to what you believe. And so when you are believing I'm successful or I can be successful, you'll start seeing, hearing, noticing out of all the data and information we process second to second. So just to be clear here, our subconscious mind processes up to 1 billion bits per second of data. Only 40 to 60 bits per second of data make it to the conscious mind. And it's usually based on the concepts you have, the self-identity you already have, the beliefs you have. So for example, if you think I am unlucky or I can't save money, you're always noticing all the ways that you struggle in your relationship to money. You're always noticing all the times that you're unlucky. If you believe I can be successful, I can save money, I can earn more money, then your subconscious mind is actually passing that information up to your conscious mind to give you the information you need to keep your identity alive. So because it sees us as familiar, safe, and equating to greater chance at survival. So then you get into a position where you're like, oh, I can do X, Y, Z. I can be more successful. You start thinking of different opportunities, ideas, ways that you can get ahead instead of constantly, instead your RAS's focus being all the people that are getting ahead of you and that it's not possible for you and focusing on that throughout the course of the day, right? We all know somebody who is always upset, like, oh, this person gets ahead, this person's doing well, this person, you can hear that their internal dialogue is focused on that throughout the course of the day, right? And that's because of what their RAS is tuning them into, because of what beliefs they already carry about their identity that are prehistoric or that are, you know, from the earlier parts of their lives, right? So I hope you can see this so far. So what we're doing is we're trying to create new self-concepts in each of the seven areas of life. And maybe we'll find a bunch in each area. Maybe you find like four or five big pain points that are not serving you in each area. Don't overwhelm yourself. Pick one area of life that you want to think about differently and create a morning routine where you feed, you know, a few new stories each day for about 21 days and you'll see massive improvement in that area. So why I can be successful, why I can get along in my workplace relationships, why I can contribute ideas in meetings, like, you know, and just giving yourself that proof regularly to reprogram those self-concepts that you would like to have and like to choose instead of its opposite. Okay. Now, the next major thing that we want to look at. So these are the really important core parts, okay? The other thing we want to look at here are what are our coping mechanisms, okay? So what are our behavioral patterns as people when we feel stressed, when we feel less optimal. And these are things your brain chose to adapt and to help you in some form. But sometimes these things are eventually doing more harm than good. So think of that example we gave earlier, which is like the temper tantrum. Like maybe it helped you to throw a temper tantrum at 6 years old because you got candy and affection. But maybe when you have a temper tantrum with your partner or your coworkers at 46 years old, people stay away and it prevents you from moving forward in relationships and at work. So we want to look at what are the coping mechanisms that I have when I feel stressed and just take a look and audit. You can look in the form of the seven areas of life. So in career, do I avoid people? Do I avoid conflict? Do I minimize myself or silence myself and not allow myself to speak up? When I am in my financial area of life, do I spend compulsively when I'm feeling distressed? Okay. Do I find myself giving money to everybody else to try to win them over when I feel that I'm disliked? Like, what are your ways of coping in each of the seven areas of life and that are working for you and not working for you? So career, financial, so mental, in your mental area of life, how do you form your own opinions? Do you find yourself always just forming the opinion of whatever your partner has? And that's your coping mechanism. Do you find yourself just, you know, accepting information at face value and not doing your own digging and research and finding your own opinions? And maybe that's your way of just coping with that area of life. Some of these things you may be like, that's fine. Some of these things you might be like, you know what? I really want to change this about my self identity and create something that for myself in the future that does this instead of that. Right? And so we're evaluating ourselves. Isn't it interesting too, how we like spend all this time as people? And we talk a lot in the dating world about like the traits we want our partner to have, the qualities we want our children to have, the, you know, all these different things. But it's like, hey, have you ever audited yourself? And have you ever like taken a look and just really seen what's going on there beneath the surface and taken some time to say, hey, this is working for me, or hey, that's not working for me? It's a very powerful thing to do, especially when you can then take that information and put it in a new direction and feed into new things that you would consciously choose. So what other coping mechanisms do you have? You can look in all the seven areas of life. What are your emotional coping mechanisms? Do you drink too much wine when you feel stressed instead of dealing with your feelings? Do you have some kind of substance coping mechanism? Do you have some kind of, do you binge eat? Do you watch a ton of television for prolonged periods of time to avoid your emotions? Are you excessively on social media? And I'm not saying that like these things are bad. Like we're going to avoid stuff sometimes. We're going to, say imperfect things sometimes. We're going to want to watch television as a person sometimes, but it's when these things are excessive and we know that they're coping that we want to go, hey, time to consciously ingrain a new coping mechanism that's constantly moving the needle and the sense of self that we want to continue to grow, evolve, and develop and nurture so that, again, we got to choose, not the past ways and all we knew how to do, choosing when we were in a traumatized space or going through a challenging experience. So then we would look at, okay, what are the coping mechanisms I have? Pick your top one or two. And all you're going to do is look at what needs they're meeting. Okay. So if you are binge watching television, what needs does it meet and how you can meet those needs in healthier forms. Okay. So if my needs are being met by, let's say I binge watch TV all day. And let's say the needs that are met are comfort, escape, which is like relief, right? Emotional connection. Let's say I watch shows with emotional connection to the characters, which is very common for people. So then let's say I sit down and I'm like, okay, so this is telling me when I feel off, my way of soothing is that my brain needs emotional connection, comfort, and relief. And so how can I get those things met in a healthier form? What are healthier ways of getting relief? Maybe I do an emotional processing sheet and work through my stories and pain points. Maybe I go for a run. Maybe I do yoga or meditate or just sit with myself and do some somatic work and let my emotions pass and just witnessing them and seeing what I need and doing those somatic steps from the somatic course. What brings me relief in a healthier form? Not that watching TV is like the be all and end all of unhealthy, but that if in excess we're doing that, it's preventing us from upgrading ourselves, right? So what are my coping mechanisms? What needs are they meeting? How can I get more emotional connection when I need soothing and more comfort in general? So you're picking those needs, you're finding healthier ways of getting those needs met. And then you're doing that same thing that we keep talking about, this big theme here today, which is negative emotional associations to the old coping mechanisms, positive emotional associations to the new ones. So for example, what is the cost of binge watching TV instead of dealing with my emotions? and actually working through them. Well, then they build up at the subconscious level. They wait to come out in different ways. I'm avoiding myself. I keep a shadow self, or I'm expecting other people to avoid me. And I prime my subconscious mind to expect that in relationships. Then you go through and you look at all the costs. And what are the benefits of actually doing an emotional processing sheet? Or what are the benefits of showing up differently in a situation? And doing that shift helps you make new emotional associations and then also meet needs with these new patterns that are available to you. Okay. So here's what we're going to look at so far. Okay. And this is like the overarching theme of this whole thing. You're going to look at like my whole sense of self and self-identity. And you're going to recognize a lot of the self-identity is born of trauma. It's just the reality. And some of those led to really good outcomes, and some of those led to suboptimal outcomes. And some of these things may be making me unhappy in my life. So I have to evaluate. I have to audit myself and see what's not serving the highest expression of myself and what I want to become and what I want to create for my life and how I want to feel fulfilled on a regular basis. I'm going to look at the needs in my life. I'm going to look at the traits in my life. I'm going to look at the values and morals in my life. I'm going to look at the stories and concepts of self. And I'm going to look at the coping mechanisms I have. And I'm going to see what's in there and I'm going to audit. And then I have all these reprogramming tools available to me. Thais just told me about them in this webinar. I have them available to me in the course with worksheets and detailed steps. And I can look at where I may be struggling the most and what's holding me back the most and pick one area at a time and do reprogramming in that area. So maybe you're like, whoa, I have some really hard self-concepts of like my relationship to money. Great. Start there. Start with like the things that are weighing on you the most, and then use the reprogramming tools to upgrade that. And then this can be something you do once a month. Maybe you spend 1 week a month just like upgrading a part of self that was born from trauma that your conscious mind and true self wouldn't have wanted to choose. And you've got reprogramming tools to do that. And the more you know yourself, you're in relationship to yourself, you understand your needs, you've removed unhealthy self-concepts, the better you're going to feel on a regular basis. And so now there's one thing left that I feel like maybe a lot of you guys were like waiting for, which is how to self-soothe according to these things. And we talk a lot about different self-soothing techniques in all these different areas of the course, of all the different areas of PDS. But what I want you to take away is to make a little worksheet, to make a little short list of strategies that help you self-soothe, because everybody has different ways they self-soothe. And it's kind of like love languages, right? It's like I can have my partner try to give me love in acts of service, but if my biggest love language is quality time, it's like that love is trying to be passed in a form that I'm not that good at receiving. And the same idea happens with self-soothing, right? We all have different things that work better for us when it comes to self-soothing. And for some of us, we have things that are really important and really powerful for us, and other things just don't really land with us. And so part of like self-identity as well is knowing what works for you, okay? And what healthy self-soothing activities and habits you have. So you can start by making a list. And what I notice is for different attachment styles, there tends to be different things, right? For anxious, preoccupied individuals, tend to self-soothe by looking at their outside world and bringing that outside world in, right? And trying to like self-soothe through friends, family members, all these different things. That's not necessarily like strengthening your self-identity soothing. That's like relying on old subconscious patterns that may be a little bit polarized, because what we ideally want to have is the ability to soothe ourselves and receive soothing from others, not mutually exclusive components. And so the ability to soothe yourself, what you can look at as an anxious, preoccupied person is, what are the ways that I like to get soothed from others? Okay. Is it through physical affection? Is it through reassurance? Is it through certainty? Is it through validation? And these tend to be the big ones for APs. And it's like, how can I give these things to myself? How can I give physical affection to myself? Well, you're not going to like sit and like rub your arm, although you can. But what you're probably going to want to do is like, what simulates feelings of physical affection? Physical affection makes you feel safe, comforted, coddled. Can I wrap myself in blankets when I need to self-soothe and put on comfy clothes and kind of snuggle up on the couch? When it comes to certainty, how can I create more certainty for myself on a regular basis? You know, when I'm feeling out of sorts, Can I make a list of like, what's certain for me right now? What am I sure about? What's working for me on a regular basis? Can I create a schedule, structure, order in my life? Like what different ways can I meet my own needs for certainty? When I need reassurance or validation, how can I give these things to myself? And to question my stories that might be taking away from validation and saying things are all my fault. Like, so make a short list for your self-soothing so that you know yourself enough to say, these are the things that work best for me. Maybe it's starting with a meditation and then doing some of those habits. Maybe it's going for a run and then doing those habits. People can have different ways. It can be doing yoga, but what you want to have on hand is a list of the top four or five things that help you self-soothe on a regular basis. And then when you feel out of sorts, you can, because sometimes you're going to feel like doing one thing, but not the other. You have a variety of go-tos that are there for you for the purpose of self-soothing. And the more you know yourself and the more you're showing up to create more of what you want for your life, so you're fulfilling yourself from the inside out, now you also have a greater capacity to soothe overall. And you have this short list of activities that are there. So that's our anxious preoccupied. Dismissive avoidant. Dismissive avoidance for soothing do really well with somatic work. Dismissive avoidants love to soothe by avoiding themselves, right? And by like denying their feelings and compartmentalizing. But the real work is like to go into those feelings, to realize that those feelings are safe, to realize that they're just sensations in your body. That's it. That's all emotions are. And to be able to take some time to just like notice your emotions, feel what's happening in your body, do some of that somatic work. Another really powerful self-soothing practice for DAs that are doing the work is nervous system regulation work. But make a list. Maybe it's going for a run and then doing nervous system regulation work. Maybe it's, doing some kind of like sport and then doing somatic processing. So make a list of what's currently working for you. But then also, as we're here to shape our self-identity, what you would like to do more of the future that you know has the greatest impact. Is it doing exposure response work so proactively? So these things that usually come up for you aren't coming up for you. Is it practicing being more accepting of your mistakes instead of shaming of yourself? So like really tuning in there and seeing what works best. For fearful avoidance, a lot of self-soothing is like emotional processing, really powerful tool for FAs where you're questioning your story. Somatic work, when a fearful avoidance is extremely triggered, is another really powerful tool for self-soothing. Sometimes nervous system regulation proactively can be very beneficial because sometimes the FA is a little dysregulated. Sometimes going and exercising and then doing a meditation can be really beneficial for nervous system regulation. So there can be many different things, but the idea is to know what ours are now that are preferable and know what we want to install more of in the future. Practice through repetition plus emotion. So we're ingraining these new self-soothing activities that relate to the identity that we want to create more of going forward. So I hope this all makes a lot of sense. These are our major pillars for today. Again, then from this, what you can do, and I won't go through this right now, you can actually summarize. Like if you want to go through this actual course in detail, you can go through and be like, traits I want to have more of, new self-concepts I want to have. Instead of I'm always going to fail, I can succeed. It's possible for me to succeed. Traits you want to ingrain, the needs that you know that you have, the morals and values you want to live by. And you can jot these things down when you've sort of discovered them and gone through some of the exercises or discovered some from today. And then write this into like a little mission statement for your life. Like, this is what I want to create more of in the future. This is the direction I want to move in to support my needs. These are the boundaries I want to have. These are the self-concepts I'm going to create more of. And you can actually like listen to this over and over again. So you've got that repetition and emotion and even visualization component in creating sort of the mission and vision for your future so that you're able to very quickly shed these things that are no longer serving and really get to choose who you are and choose who you want to become. Come from a conscious perspective that's not chosen by fear or trauma or pain, but that's chosen from like, no, this is the truest expression of myself that I want. And again, this is not rigid. It doesn't mean this is your destination for life. You can keep checking back in with yourself and see what you want to develop more of and what direction you want to move in. But it's a process, and it's a process of being in relationship to self, being checked in, having the ability to audit ourselves from time to time, and then nurture in through repetition and emotion the things that we want to create long term.